Okay, let me pray for us and we'll get into today's text. Jesus, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for this community. I thank you for the way we love one another and know one another. Thank you for every mother or spiritual mother in this room. And I ask you to meet with us now, Spirit, in a personal way, to speak to us the words that you want us to hear. And I pray that nothing would distract us from the things you're wanting to say to us. Help us to hear your words this morning. And Spirit, I pray, empower us by your grace to respond and live them out and leave here to be your people in this world. Amen. So my name is Grant. I'm one of the pastors here at Restored, and a happy Mother's Day to all the different moms in the room today. If you don't know me, you're probably hearing my accent and you're wondering, Australia, New Zealand, England. I get those three a lot, but I'm actually from South Africa on the East Coast, a little city called Durban. It's a city of about 3.5 million people. And one of the main differences I've noticed between Durban and San Diego are the tropical storms that would hit us, honestly, 20 or 30 times a year. So I remember as a kid growing up, I remember these storms hitting, and it would be lightning and thunder like you can't imagine. I've lived here for over 3 years now. I only remember one time that I've heard thunder since I've been in San Diego. It's probably more than that. It's probably like a couple. But I remember one time I was going to fetch Nick from the airport after she got back from India. I got stuck in this line of cars for about an hour trying to fetch her. She got stuck between San Francisco, LA, and San Diego in one day. It was like the whole of California lost their minds because there was a little bit of rain and thunder. No one knew what to do. And I was like, this is drizzle. You know, this is not a problem at all. Because honestly, growing up, I remember as a kid, these evenings where we would have to roll up towels and put them at the bases of doors so that water would not get into the house. And I remember being in fear because of these crashes of thunder, like this lightning, like witch's hands that would fill the sky as far as you could see just with light. It was very wild. And three times growing up, we had an alarm system in our home, and our house was struck by lightning, and that alarm system just went off for between an hour and 2 hours. Just whoa, whoa, whoa. So we're sitting in the dark. We've got candles all around the house. There's lightning and thunder, which scares me to this day. I'm 39 years old, and I don't like lightning and thunder. And then the alarm system is blaring, and my dad is on the phone to the alarm company trying to get them to shut it off. He's stressed. He's getting angry. He's shouting at them on the phone, one, to get above the noise of what's happening in the house, and two, because he's just so cross. And it was just this very horrible time as a kid, you know, being 6, 8, 10 years old and going through this. It was pretty disorienting and stressful and tense. I think tense is probably the word I'd use to describe the feeling in my home on those nights. Now, I've lived here for 3 years and I've heard thunder once. So I'm not really used to storms in San Diego. But I think as adults, probably the storms that we remember more or less the tropical storms or the wild, loud, scary storms of nature, and probably more the storms that we go through in our lives. So I was thinking over the last 15 years of some of the storms I've been through. Relational conflicts and hurts, big storms. Some family health scares, a lot of those storms. The loss of my father-in-law a month after Shell and I got married was a really hard storm to go through. Some financial ups and downs, going through a miscarriage, and an international move during a global pandemic. So that was our big storm during a global storm that was going on. Really fun to double up those storms. But I'm sure some of you guys are thinking about storms as I'm sharing those different ones that we've been through. And I remember going through each of those different things, just the reality of like trying to orient yourself, you know, big questions, big emotions, fear, uncertainty about the future, what's going to go on, and trying to find God and just like steady the boats of our lives in the midst of what was going on. Those were really big moments. And today what we're going to do is we're going to look at a life-changing conversation in the midst of a storm. We're going to look at Jesus and the disciples in a ship out on the sea, going through a storm, and how that would be a life-changing storm for all of the disciples. And that would be a memorable moment. This would be a storm they would never forget as they traveled with Jesus through the scary moment. So you can turn to Mark 4 in your Bibles. I'm sure some of you right now are thinking, I am in a storm right now. You know, whether that's a small storm or a big storm. sure some of you are thinking, well, you know, maybe this isn't so relevant for me. I'm not going through a storm right now. I think this passage and this encounter between Jesus and the disciples has got a bunch of different things to say to each one of us. And one of my prayers has been that the Spirit would really personalize this for us this morning. So let's read from Mark 4, verse 35. It says, on that day, when evening had come, so it's getting dark, he told them, let's cross over to the other side of the sea. So they left the crowd and took him along since he was in the boat and other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose and the waves were breaking over the boat so that the boat was already being swamped. I just want you to see here, this is not a small storm. They're not exaggerating. The boat is being filled with water. This is a dramatic and dangerous moment. In verse 38, it says, he was in the stern sleeping on the cushion. So they woke him up and said to him, teacher, don't you care that we're going to die? What a passage. He got up, rebuked the wind and said to the sea, silence, be still. The wind ceased and there was a great calm. I want you to see here, great storm followed by a great calm. Jesus's power meeting the power of the storm where it's at. And then he said to them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? It's not kind of the response I would expect from Jesus after what they've been going through. Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? And they were terrified, not by Jesus, but by the storm. Sorry, not by the storm, but by Jesus. And they asked one another, who then is this? Even the wind and the sea obey him. So I want to break this up into three big ideas today. Three big ideas. The storms of life. Secondly, when you go through a moment in life where it seems like Jesus doesn't care. And lastly, who is this man? The question they ask at the end. Who is this man that even the wind and the waves obey him? So let's start with the storms of life. I don't know what you notice in this passage, but one piece that I think is really, really significant for us to see is that the disciples are following Jesus into the storm. Sometimes the disciples are doing their own thing. Too often in the scriptures, the disciples, the people of God, are not following God. They're doing their own thing. They're making their own decisions. They're heading in different directions. Followers of God can often be like cats, like really hard to herd. But here what we see is the disciples are following faithfully. They're devoted to Jesus. They're going with Jesus. It's him who says, after a long day of teaching, Mark 4 is all teaching, Jesus says, let's get in the boat and get away. Let's go to the other side of the sea. And they say, okay. So they've been listening to Jesus's word. They're following Jesus personally. They've heard what he is saying to them by his spirit, if I can say it that way. They get into the boat with him and they're going where he wants to go. They're obeying him fully. I don't know if you've ever felt a time like that in your life. Maybe someone gives you a prophetic word. And you're like, whoa, God has spoken to me. I know what he's saying. I know what the word of the Lord is to me. Or you've been in a church service like this and the Spirit has just done something in you where you know that that Sunday was for you. That message was for you. Or you feel convicted about something you know you need to change, or like God has met with you in a really comforting and personal way. I've had those Sundays where I'm like, there's no ways that this could have been for anyone else. This was God shone his light on me. This Sunday was for me. And I know that God is with me and speaking to me. I know what I need to do. I know that I'm in the very center of the will of God. I'm right where God wants me to be, responding to him in that moment. That's exactly where the disciples are in Mark chapter 4. They're in the will of God, the center of the will of God. They know that they know they're where God wants them to be. And the very next thing that happens is a massive storm hits them and their lives get absolutely rocked, which is confusing, right? I would not expect that. If I'm like on the high of just being in the presence of God, feeling like I know what God has called me to, I know that I'm walking with him, I would not expect to be rocked and flipped upside down by a storm in life. But that's what happens to them. It's pretty confusing. And at the end of Matthew 7, we find Jesus at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, like the most well-known sermon of all time. Jesus is speaking about other storms, and he's talking to us about how we respond when we are with Jesus in a storm, or how we respond to the storms of life. And he says this, Matthew 7, verse 24 and 25. It says, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts of them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, the rivers rose, the winds blew and pounded that house. You know, the waves are getting into the ship. Yet it didn't collapse because its foundation was on the rock. And what we see in his sermon and in all of his teaching is Jesus is calling people to build their lives on his word, on his will, on his way, on his teachings. He's showing us how to live and how to build our lives. And we live in a time now, like I'm amazed at the different resources that are out there. I was looking at the Bible Project yesterday. They're doing a series through the book of Exodus right now. They've got podcasts, they've got videos, they've got articles you can read. And this is one ministry, just the different things that they are creating to help Christians know the Bible. It's incredible. If you've got questions, I would love to point you in the direction of some helpful resources to answer your questions, help you to know the Bible better and to grow, because there are so many. But there are so many Christians today who have access to so many resources and maybe have been sitting in church for years and years that they know the Bible well. They know the stories of the scriptures well. They know the applications well. But at the same time, we haven't been shaped and formed by the word. We haven't let it go down deep into our hearts. We haven't responded to it or obeyed it. So we know it. We're familiar with it, which can be almost like an inoculation. We know what God's word says, but it's not transforming us from the inside out. And instead, we become familiar with the word and we're building our lives on the teachings of other teachers. It could be like podcasts or therapists or New York Times bestsellers or some other influencer or voice that you really hold to. We're building our lives on those foundations and on those words rather than on the words of Jesus. And what Jesus says in Matthew 7 and in other places is he encourages us. He says, everyone will go through a storm. Whether you're a follower of his or not, everyone is going to go through storms in life. But he encourages us and says that if we build our lives on his word, the storms will come and they could pound against the house. The waves could be getting into the ship right now in your life. And his encouragement is that the storms will come, but those who build on his word will be stable and secure. Those who build on him, even though the storms will come, you will stand firm and you will be able to continue. It's kind of a muted encouragement, right? Because we don't want to go through those storms. But when the storms come, his word helps us to stand firm. In Mark 4, verse 37, it says, a great windstorm arose and the waves were breaking over the boat so that the boat was already being swamped. I think to myself that these disciples were exaggerating a little bit. Like, oh, come on, guys, it wasn't that bad of a storm. You know, it's like a few little waves. These were experienced fishermen. They knew the Sea of Galilee. This was their turf. This was where they fished. Their livelihoods were based on knowing this water and knowing where to go and how to navigate it. So when they say this is a dangerous storm, and when they say this could take our lives, I think we should trust them. This is a very big deal, what they're going through in this boat. This is not just a little storm. This is a life-threatening storm that Jesus is leading them into. Remember, Jesus says, get in this boat with me and let's go to the other side. Jesus is leading them through this life-threatening storm. And they respond to this by saying these words in verse 38. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on the cushion. So they woke him up and said to him, teacher, don't you care that we're going to die? I won't ask you to raise your hand, but I have said to Jesus, don't you care before. You know, there've been moments of pain in my life where I've said, how can this happen? How can I go through this storm and you be a good God? How can you care about me and you let this happen to me, God? I don't get it. And I'm sure many of you could say that too. This is a very intense response, but this verse does make me laugh and I'll show you why. It's not the don't you care that we're going to die part. It's another part of the storm, which is a very interesting detail. Someone, an eyewitness, has been in that situation and they've been so offended, so resentful, so angry, so bitter with Jesus that this seems to have imprinted on them and they haven't been able to let this go because they kind of got worked up the fact that Jesus is nowhere to be seen when these waves are pounding the ship. They think they're going to die. So they've marched to the back of the stern with some words to speak to Jesus. And when they finally get to him, they see him and his head is lying on a cushion. It's like the weirdest detail, I think, in the whole Bible to me. Maybe you've got another detail that you prefer, but it feels like the most passive-aggressive verse in the whole of the Bible. We're about to die and Jesus is lying on a cushion at the back of the stern. It's like there's this audible sigh, like, oh. You know, they finally get to Jesus and they're about to confront him and they're like, oh, a cushion? Really? A cushion? I love it. I love the detail of the Bible here. And Mark makes a conscious decision as the author of this text to include this detail. He didn't need to. And he wasn't there. Mark was not there on this boat when this happened. So someone else, an eyewitness, maybe the person who confronted Jesus, is relaying the story and telling him what happened. And they go, and you would not believe what he was doing. He was at the back of the boat lying on a cushion. And it just stuck with Mark. He thought, I need to include this. And when I was preparing the sermon, I thought, I wonder if anyone has written about the cushion situation. Oh, and they have. There's lots out there about the cushion. Commentators say, and this is the theological part of this, they say that this proves that the scriptures are written by eyewitnesses. This is not a myth. In a myth, you don't include details like the cushion. You just say, oh, they were in a boat and there was a storm and Jesus performed a miracle. No, this is seen by an eyewitness who remembers the detail. As we get into the story, I'd love to encourage you to do almost an Ignatian meditation where you think through the details, the sights and sounds, the different senses that you would engage with this text to think of what it was like to be in that boat. Because Mark wasn't there, but he's gotten this eyewitness report that there was a cushion helping us to kind of fill in the details of the scene. The second thing the theologians say is this helps us to see the divinity and the humanity of Jesus together. Christian theology teaches us that Jesus was fully God and fully man at the same time. Now, I want you to imagine this. Mark chapter 4, Jesus has been teaching all day long. You might not believe this. Preaching can be physically, emotionally, spiritually draining. After a sermon, you are tired. But Jesus has been going all day long. And he says to the disciples, listen, the people, they want so much from me. I'm tired. They want me to pray. They want me to answer questions, perform miracles. Can we just get away so I can have a break? They get into the boat and Jesus in his humanity rests on a cushion and he falls asleep. But we also see the divinity of Jesus here, that Jesus isn't just sleeping because he's tired. He's also sleeping because he is God, fully God, in control of all things. So he does not have to fear the storms because he knows he can just speak and calm the storms. He has the authority and the power to do that. So here the theologians say, we see the authority of God and the humanity of Jesus together in the scene on the cushion. But again, Mark makes a decision to include that for our benefit as we read this passage. And what I find interesting is Mark was not there, but Mark seems to have traveled extensively with Peter, the apostle. So this is a bit of conjecture from my side. I could be wrong, but Peter is quite a hothead. He's quite abrasive, could kind of have these emotional ups and downs. And in fact, Mark's gospel is called Peter's gospel because Peter seems to be the one that has influenced so much of Mark's writing. So I think it's at least possible that Peter was the one who in the midst of the storm says, I'm going to go to the back and confront Jesus. And while they're sitting around a fire or something like that, and Mark is thinking through the gospel and what he's going to write, Peter again and again, years later after this moment, is telling Mark, and his head was on a cushion. You wouldn't believe what he was lying on a cushion. I don't know if you've got this kind of situation in your home with a spouse or a roommate or something like that, where they just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. Like it could be the toilet seat, you know, they just don't put the toilet seat down. I've spoken to them so many times, but they just leave it up. It's like they don't even care. Or like the milk. They make coffee in the morning and they leave the milk on their counter. No matter how many times I say, please put it back in the fridge, it's going to spoil, they leave it out. It seems like that kind of thing. Peter's triggered. Every time he gets in a fishing boat and he sees a cushion, it just brings it all back for him. Or he gets on someone's couch at their home and he sees a cushion and he goes, Jesus, the cushion. This is probably for a very small group of you, but I was just picturing that scene in Friends with Ross's turkey sandwich after Thanksgiving. Yeah, one person knows. The moist maker, he makes this amazing sandwich that he takes to work and his boss eats it and throws it in the trash. And Ross goes, my sandwich. Probably the first time in a sitcom this has happened. It zooms out once again, almost like the whole world. You just hear Ross's voice, my sandwich. And I feel like that's what happened with Peter when he sees the cushion. And I want you to also notice here, he doesn't say a cushion, it's the cushion. It's like the only cushion on this whole boat, and Jesus is lying on it. We're out here fighting for our lives, and Jesus has selfishly taken the one cushion and put his head down on it. Mark chooses to include this in the story of Jesus' life. Some of you are like, you're spending a lot of time on this, Grant. Are you going anywhere with this cushion? I promise you I am. I don't know if there's any part of you right now as you face a storm or as you faced a storm in the past where you are angry or bitter or resentful with Jesus, where he hasn't done the thing that you think he should do, where he hasn't shown up in the way you think he should show up, where he hasn't responded to your prayers. You know, they're praying and Jesus is silent. They're praying and Jesus is asleep. And maybe for you, it's felt like you've been going through something and Jesus is nowhere to be seen. He's sleeping in the back. He's not responding. He's not showing up. He's not helping. I just wonder if any of us here in this room today, we've got a cushion in our lives. We've got something that has happened in the past that every time it comes up, there's like this sharp dig in our spirit, in our soul. Like, where was Jesus in that? Why did he let me go through that? We feel like this anger towards him, this resistance to him, this trust is broken with him, the cushion. And one of the things that Mark 4 is showing us is that Jesus isn't necessarily going to do what we want him to do when we want him to do it and in the way that we think he should. In fact, one of the things that Mark 4 is going to teach us is that if we want to grow as followers of Jesus, then one of the things we're going to have to embrace and accept is mystery and uncertainty and unanswered questions and times where we do not have clarity. And as someone who loves clarity, that's not something I particularly enjoy. And then maybe as we read this, you're thinking to yourself, and I think this is a very fair question. Well, if Jesus really loved the disciples, like if he really loved them, why would he allow them to go through this? Why would he take them through this life-threatening storm? It's a really good question. We avoid suffering in the West. I don't think anyone likes suffering, but we definitely avoid it. And I think there is a lie in our culture that is trying to shape us and form us to believe that we should always be happy and that everything should always be going well and that we could have that all the time, that we should have that all the time. And when we do not feel happy, when things are not going our way, when things are hard, it's very natural for us to look to Jesus and say, where are you, Jesus, in this? Where are you in this situation I'm going through? Why do I feel the way that I feel? But the scriptures don't promise us that following Jesus will always mean an easy life or a happy life. In fact, this passage is showing us that getting in the boat with Jesus may lead to storms that you wouldn't have faced otherwise. Following Jesus may lead to times in your life which are harder because you are following him. Following him doesn't guarantee an easy life. In fact, you know, it surprised me as I was preparing for this. Two chapters later in Mark 6, there's another storm, another boat and another storm. And I was thinking of the times in the Gospels where Jesus is preaching to a crowd and they run out of food. And what do? They have to feed 5,000 and then a few chapters later, 4,000. It's like Jesus really wants the disciples to learn this lesson. In Mark 4 and Mark 6, we have two boats and two storms. In the first story, Jesus is in the boat with them. In the second, he's not. He sends them off without him. And he comes walking to them on the water in the middle of the night. It's like a really wild thing. Sometimes we know that we know that Jesus is with us in the storms. Sometimes we don't feel like he's with us. We don't know where he is, but he still is pursuing us and he still does care about us. It seems for the disciples, Jesus really wants them to learn the lesson of the storm. I think the fact that he includes that twice in Mark, a 16-chapter book, shows us that he really wants us to learn the lesson of the storm. You see, there are certain things we can only learn about life and about God in the storms. So God sends us into these storms as a classroom to learn and grow and be shaped and changed. Not because he doesn't love us, but because he does. Not because he doesn't care about us, but because he cares about us too much to not let us go through these things. And something that we notice at the end of the story is that Jesus never gives them an answer for why they had to go through the storm. Again, I don't like that. He never tells them the lesson that they were meant to learn through the storm. But they do leave this encounter in the storm with a deeper revelation of Jesus, having seen him more clearly, in awe of him. They don't necessarily have clarity, but they have a better encounter of what he's like. And storms can teach us so many things. Storms give us revelation of God. Storms remind us that we're not in control and that we never have been, even though we feel this illusion of control. And storms also remind us that Jesus is in control. That Jesus is in control, whether we realize that or not. J.D. Greer, speaking on this passage, says that in a storm, Jesus will always do one of two things. He'll show off his power by delivering you from the storm, or he'll show off his power by his ability to keep you in the storm. I don't like that one. Sometimes Jesus will look at the storm and say, "Peace, be still." And other times he'll look at us in the midst of the storm and say, "Peace, be still. I'm with you." But he is with us in both, and he cares. Their question is, doesn't he care? Do you even care about us, Jesus? The answer is yes, he cares. And there's one very powerful reason that we can trust that Jesus cares, even when we go through these storms. And again, some of you have been through huge storms in your life. Some of you are in them, and some of you will face big storms in the future. But Mark is actually intentionally pointing us back to Jonah chapter 1 in this passage, because he's wanting us to see a whole bunch of different things that are going on. I recently watched the movie I was most excited about this year, Death of a Unicorn. Most of you are like, never heard of that. It sounds terrible. I don't want to recommend it. I think watch the trailer first. Don't dive deep into this. It's a horror comedy about unicorns gone wild. So I don't think most of you are going to enjoy it. I just want to say that. But I loved it. And there were a bunch of different scenes in this film that were like pointing you to other films, like beautiful homage to Jaws and Alien and E.T. and Jurassic Park. Just these beautiful scenes going on. In Mark 4, what the author is doing is he's pointing us back to Jonah chapter 1. There's these subtle nods throughout pointing us to what happened in the story of Jonah. Let me show you a few of these. Both Jesus and Jonah are in a boat and they're sleeping through the storm. Both Jesus and Jonah are woken by scared sailors who ask, "Don't you care?" And Mark writes this phrase. He says, "The wind ceased and there was a great calm." It's the exact same phrase that is used in Jonah chapter 1. It's a nod to what's going on there. But there are some differences. In Jonah 1, Jonah is running from God, whereas the disciples are actually following him. They're with Jesus in the boat, whereas Jonah has been running from the will of God. So I want you to see, we can go through storms when we're in the very center of the will of God and when we're running from God. And this is where it gets really interesting. Jonah calmed the storm by plunging himself into the storm. Jonah gave himself to save the sailors on the boat. Jonah gave his life in exchange for theirs. Jonah died for his sins so that they may be saved and spared. And this is pointing to something else, because it's interesting. Jesus doesn't give his life here. Jesus speaks a word. But in Matthew 12, verse 40, it says, "For as Jonah was in the belly of the huge fish 3 days and three nights, so the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights." It's like Jesus couldn't give himself in this storm in Mark 4 because there was another storm that he needed to give himself for. Jesus is a picture of Jonah for us, to quote Keller, the true and greater Jonah. But he had to save himself for the cross. Often in scripture, the sea and the storm is meant to represent chaos in the world and the wrath of God. And what we see on the cross is that Jesus would plunge himself into the sea of chaos and God's wrath in our place. There he would be swallowed up by death for 3 days, like Jonah was swallowed up by the fish. And that wrath of God was this terrible, raging sea which consumed him. It's greater than we could ever imagine or comprehend. And Jesus gave himself for us. He went into the sea so that we would not be destroyed. He was destroyed in our place. So whereas Jonah gives himself for his sin, for what he has done, Jesus gives us himself for the sin of the world, even though it's our sin and not his. So I want to say, if you are in a storm right now, or in the future, if you go through a storm, or if you're trying to make sense of storms you've been in the past, and you've prayed and you've thought, he's sleeping in the boat, He's lying on the cushion. He's nowhere to be seen. He's not speaking. He's not helping. He's not answering me. Does he even care? The answer is yes. And Mark 4 is inviting us to trust in this. Because Jesus gave himself in the ultimate storm, we do not have to worry that he will abandon us in the smallest storms that we face in this life. Jesus cares. Mark 4, Jonah 1, the whole of the scriptures are saying God cares about the storms that you face. We'll end with this question, who is this man? In Mark 4, verse 39 to 41, it says, Jesus got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, silence, be still. The wind ceased and there was a great calm. And then he said to them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? That is an absolutely wild sentence. Why are you afraid? He knows why they're afraid. Why are you afraid? Do you have no faith? And they were terrified, not by the storm, but by Jesus. They were terrified and asked one another, who then is this? Even the wind and the sea obey him. The story doesn't end with the disciples feeling comforted. It ends with them feeling terrified, which is not what I'm used to in the scriptures. This is not how I would write the Bible if I was the author. They were terrified. The ESV says they were filled with great fear. And that seems important because they were afraid before when they were in the storm. But after Jesus calms the storm, they are filled with great fear. So fearful, great fear. There's like this really interesting trajectory which happens because it seems like they're more scared after the storm has been calmed than they were in the storm. And we see great storm, great calm, great fear. That's the trajectory of this moment in Mark 4. What is going on here? And they ask each other in amazement, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? Jews believed that no one but God could command the weather. So prophets would perform miracles, they would raise the dead, they would do incredible things, but no one but God could control the weather. There's actually, in the Apocrypha, in the book of 2 Maccabees, there's an account of a prophet saying he had power over the weather, and he's called a blasphemer because no one but God can control the weather. And what we see in this situation is that Jesus doesn't pray. Jesus doesn't say, God, would you calm this storm? Jesus, out of his own power and authority, just speaks to the storm and instantly it just goes calm. Jesus is showing us something about who he is. So when they say, who is this man that even the wind and the waves obey him? They know. They know. They're seeing in front of themselves that this man is clearly God. And Mark, I mean, can I just say the design and the aesthetic of the scriptures is so incredible. In the first few chapters of Mark, Mark gives us a bunch of different situations where different things obey the words of Jesus. We see a sick man healed, disease obeys him. We see someone who is dead raised to life by Jesus's words. We see demons cast out and people set free by Jesus's words. And now we see the wind and the waves obeying Jesus. It's like Mark is saying to us here, if disease, demons, death, and nature are going to obey this man, will you? If everything in creation is going to submit to him and listen to his words and follow him, will you follow his words and trust him and obey him too? Why wouldn't you build his life on his word? If his word is this powerful, if it is this good, why wouldn't you build your life on his word? And reading this, I was thinking about why the disciples are feeling this way, terrified, filled with great fear. And then I realized this sandwich of two rebukes. I'm a big encouragement sandwich guy. Someone sent me a video about that this week. No one's going to own it. I think it was a Saturday Night Live thing about an encouragement. Do you guys know what this is? Dave sent it to me. Yeah. You know, you want to say a hard thing to someone. So you say compliment, encouragement, hard thing. Bit of encouragement on the back end. This is a rebuke sandwich that we've got going on here at the end of this. Jesus rebukes the waves and then he turns and he rebukes the disciples and then they're filled with great fear and we end the passage. and we'll end on that note. Jesus, after calming the storm, looks at them and he says, what's wrong with you? You know, why are you guys afraid? Where's your faith? Why are you so immature? I thought by now you would know me better. I thought by now you guys were further on in your journey, which I think is both an encouragement and a challenge for us, right? It's encouraging to see, as some of the guys said on Friday night at our men's meeting, it's encouraging to see the disciples struggling and in process. I'm encouraged by that. It is discouraging and challenging to see that I have areas that I need to grow in. And that's what we see here in Mark 4. Jesus challenges their immaturity. He challenges their lack of faith because he thinks by now they shouldn't be scared of the storm because they know Jesus is with them, and they shouldn't be scared of death because they know that Jesus is greater than death. What I thought about that's so incredible is later on, almost every single one of them will die courageously for preaching about Jesus. They will face death with courage because they have learned the lesson that Jesus is greater than death. But at this time, they're still terrified. If you are in a process right now where you are seeing your immaturity and your weakness, I want to encourage you that God is at work in your life. Ask for his grace. Ask for the Spirit's help because he is wanting to help you. Out of his infinite grace and resources, he wants to empower you to grow. But here what we see is Jesus' rebuke is powerful because he's grounding them in reality. He's helping to orient them around ultimate reality, around who he is, because the storm is real and the storm is great and the storm is dangerous. That's true. But Jesus is greater, which is the ultimate reality he wants them to see. That even if the storm does take their lives, Jesus is greater and Jesus is worth it. And this might be a hard word to accept. Beautiful morning for Mother's Day to be talking about life-changing convos in the storm. And honestly, Jesus doesn't seem tactful or empathetic or thoughtful in the way that he responds to the disciples. Like, I cannot imagine a Christian leadership podcast where they say, hey, if you're in a situation like this, you should do what Jesus does. Just rebuke them, challenge them for their lack of faith and their fear, and then end at that, end the meeting on that note. Jesus doesn't apologize for leading them into the storm. And they haven't done anything wrong. Jesus leads them into the storm. He doesn't apologize. He doesn't validate their feelings. He doesn't explain himself or tell them why he led them into the storm. He doesn't use it as a teaching moment. The way I'm wired, I'd be like, this is a great opportunity to teach them about all these things. He doesn't teach. He doesn't explain. He doesn't answer. He doesn't guide. He doesn't apologize for sleeping on the cushion. The cushion. No, he challenges them. He ends it on a challenge. Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? What do you do in life where Jesus doesn't show up in the way that you want him to show up or the way you expect him to? Or when Jesus speaks a different word to you than the one that you expect him to speak? This passage shows us that as disciples, sometimes we will not get answers or clarity to our questions. And Jesus is okay with that. Again, I'm not. I don't like that. But Jesus is okay with that. In Mark 4, one of the things we're learning is that to be a resilient disciple of Jesus means trusting him and following him even when he's not responding to our prayers in the way that we think he should. Because he is greater than all these things and he is worth it even when he doesn't give us the things that we want. I want to end with an exercise which the people that were in my summer school class last year will have done a version of this before. I see that smile. But Brendan, if you could put up the picture of the storm on the Sea of Galilee. This might be the only time in church that we ever encourage you to get out your phone. But I think this might be helpful if you got out your phone and you Googled this picture now, because there's a lot of detail there that I'd love you to see. This is a painting from 1633 by Rembrandt. It's called The Storm on the Sea of Galilee. And it's a meditation on the passage that we've been in today from Mark 4, verse 35 to 41. What's really interesting about this is if you look, there's Jesus and 13 men in the boat, the 12 disciples and Rembrandt, because he would paint himself into all of his paintings. And what's kind of cool about that is you see like his meditation on the story, like he's literally painting himself into what's going on. He's literally thinking through what would it be like for me to be in that boat with the disciples experiencing that live. And by doing that, he invites us to do the same thing. He invites us to picture the realities of what's going on and to respond to Jesus in the midst of this. So I'm going to do my best to point out each one of these people and what they're going through. If you look at the man on the top of the boat, he looks like he's very focused on doing his job, right? He doesn't even look like he's aware of the storm. He is just trimming the sail and he is working hard and he's focused on getting it done. Seems like he's a responsible person and at the same time, like he's a hard worker even in a crisis. And we see the same with the guy at the back with that oar steering the ship. He is steering and it looks like he's very focused on the job that is ahead. He's carrying responsibility. For those of you who are in the room right now who are responsibility people, maybe you would see yourself as one of those two people doing the job no matter what is going on around you. There's three men just under the guy at the top who are around the mainsail. And it looks like they are working at the mast frantically trying to fix that sail because it's kind of become unmoored. I don't know if you can see, but that one wire has gone loose and it's just flapping in the wind. They are trying to deal with that even while this gale force wind is blowing against the ship. And what I was thinking, because they really are wasting their time. They are not going to be able to fix that sail. They don't realize it maybe, but they're not able to deal with this. And maybe you are like that right now. You find yourself in a storm and in your flesh, in your own strength, you're trying to deal with the problem that's at hand rather than trusting God or asking for help or doing it with others. They are so focused in on the task that they don't even realize they are unable to do this. They're unable to fix that sail. There's a man just over here who is barely hanging on. It looks like he's about to go off the edge. He's holding onto that wire for all of his life. But the waves are hitting him and are knocking him. I'm sure he's about to get washed over the deck. And maybe that is you this morning. Maybe you are in a storm and you are not sure how much longer you can hang on. You're not sure whether you're going to get washed out, whether you're going to make it. If that's you, I want to encourage you to ask for help. The pastors of this church would love to help you. We've got a form on our website, a pastoral care form. You could fill that out and we'll get you the help that you need. This morning, there was an announcement for the Morning with Hope class, which is going to be going on that Sydney will be leading. Maybe you want to be part of that. There are different resources we'd love to help you with if you feel like you are about to lose your grip, if you're barely holding on. What about the guys in this boat that are afraid? There's a man on the right side of the ship, kind of in the middle, who's hunched over and he's looking at the wave and he looks terrified. He looks like this wave is going to take us out. And he's just absolutely worried about that. Maybe you're filled with fear right now about what you're going through in life. Or maybe you're sick. There's a guy a little bit lower on the left, right at the bottom. He's leaning over the edge. It looks like he's about to toss his cookies, to use a polite euphemism. He does not look like he is doing well at all. And then you might notice there's a guy in white over here. You almost miss him, but he's staring into the boat. Don't know what he's doing. It actually looks like, you might not be able to see it up here. It looks like there's a dark figure just in front of him. Maybe he's going through spiritual warfare or experiencing some kind of demonic attack, but he's just zoned out. And then there's a man next to him holding the wire, the man in blue, just staring out to sea. It looks like he's given up, like he's numb, like he's detached from the situation he's in. He's not looking to Jesus. He's not trying to save the day. He's just staring out into space as if he's given up. And then you see Jesus's face lit up, glorious and beautiful. And there are two men who look like they are almost assaulting Jesus. They looks like they're waking him up. It looks like it's Peter and his friend that are going to Jesus in the stern and have shaken him and pulled him up and said, "Don't you care that we're going to die?" It looks like those are the guys. One guy's literally got his hand on Jesus' shoulder, grabbing him by the scruff of his neck. They're not looking to Jesus for salvation. They're telling Jesus what he should be doing. And then there is one other figure who I almost didn't notice in this painting. He's here in brown, just underneath them. He's kneeled down, praying. It looks like he's the only person in the boat who's looking to Jesus in the storm. A lot of them are close to Jesus, but he's the only one who's actually looking to Jesus in the midst of this moment. I wanted to ask you, in light of everything we've spoken about today, which one are you? Or if you don't identify with any of these people, like which character would you be in this boat? Maybe you're not going through a storm right now, so it's harder to decide which one am I. Maybe the storms of the past. How have you shown up? How have you been in the boats? Or the next storm that you face, small or large, how do you think you will respond to the challenges of life? But what this passage teaches us is that we will all go through storms and that Jesus does care even as we go through them. And he gives us this invitation to come to him and to trust him. So I wanted to ask, could the band come forward? And could I ask you to stand? We're going to have our prayer team on the sides after this. If you do want to go to someone for prayer, you don't have to share the full story. You can just say, I love prayer for this thing. But if you're happy to close your eyes where you are, I just love you to think for a moment, you know, what is on my mind? What is in my heart as we go into this time of response? What stands out to me from this passage? What am I feeling? What am I challenged by? What do I desire? Who in the boat would I be? My encouragement to all of us today is like that last man, that we would look to Jesus. Our response in the storm might mean more than just looking to Jesus. It probably means asking for help. It might mean that we need pastoral care or we need to see a counselor. Maybe we need practical help in the situation we're in. Probably we can't do it alone. But even now, would you orient yourself to Jesus and to ultimate reality that he is the Lord of the storm and that he threw himself into the ultimate storm to save you? He cares about you. He cares about your situation. He cares about your question. He cares about your struggle. And I just invite you now, Holy Spirit, to be here in this space with us. I pray you would personalize this passage and this message. I pray you would show us what the thing you want us to hear this morning is and how you want us to respond. And I pray, Jesus, that we would find joy even in the worst storms of life because we're with you. Help us to trust you and to see you in the way that Jesus is calling us to. And help us to navigate these storms with faith. I ask that in your name. Amen.